Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we talk with physicist Dr. Richard Allen Miller about his recent presentation on weather control. But first, we follow up the discussion of perception management in regard to climate engineering with Vivian Workington. She's a KPFA listener, gardener, and activist who wrote the article, The Real Inconvenient Truth. Vivian, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your allowing me to express my feelings and ideas.
In a previous show, I read your interesting article titled The Real Inconvenient Truth, and then I sent that show to you to listen because we kind of missed each other as far as being on at the same time to be a guest. So you got a chance to listen to the response from some of the callers. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I was really disappointed that people did not address the specific things that I was saying, because I worked for almost 3 years on that. I had volumes of my feelings and my thoughts about what I was observing, and I feel like I distilled it down to two sides of a page. I think that even almost more than my initial absorbing of what I was seeing in the sky was just that people will not engage about what is really happening, and they'll just shine you on, and I mourn the loss of nature, but I also mourn that it doesn't faze people. I feel like a spell has been cast on the left wing, and up until 2008, I really believed that the climate change whole thing just really very strongly. And when I saw what was happening in the sky, I still didn't doubt it. But then somebody even mentioned that, oh, that's, you know, climate change, that's ridiculous, you know. And I honestly thought just even being in the room with somebody that said that was, oh, bad luck was going to come on me, or it was just an awful thing to say. But just observing the phoniness and the emptiness and the nonsensical things that they're doing to fight climate change, I'm totally convinced it's complete hokum at this point. But it's mainly because what I see, that how can people not see that? And sometimes I think it might be, you know, that kind of psychological blindness where you see something so hideous, you go blind, and that people have gone blind to that. But any time I try to bring it up to people, like, you know, you're at a party and people are tinkling the glasses, and you want to point out that it started out sunny, and then the sky became cloudy just because of the action of jets. And that doesn't alarm people. That is shocking to me. There's something deeply wrong. And then I had a friend who, I thought, when I first saw this, I thought, well, all I need to do is just start telling people about it and showing people. And this guy who I was involved with a lot of environmental work, I called him and I said, you've got to look up right now, Jamie. He said to me, you know, if they were spraying something, it would be too obvious. And it's like people do not want to let it in. You can give evidence, you can win an argument, you could win a lawsuit, but people do not want to know this. And they'd rather be angry at you. My relatives, my family, I feel like I've lost them, you know. I mean, in a way, I've lost my relationship with them, people that I were my favorite people, you know. But they want to continue with this phony environmentalism, and it is so phony, like what the city of Berkeley is doing. I've been seeing the climate action plans and all this. Climate change is the ticket to ride for the corporatists to take over our cities, I think.
I like how you pointed out in your article, Welcome to the Real Matrix, and I agree with that. It is dividing people up in terms of who sees through this and the people who'd rather not, or actually and sincerely do not see through it. There's a willful ignorance aspect as well. And there are people involved politically and on the corporate level that pretend that it's not happening, but they know the details of the nonstop geoengineering that's right in our face. We experienced that here in New York City yesterday.
Yeah, I just saw it today. I went on a bike ride, and it was just awful. And yesterday there was one of those really big clouds and a hole punch thing in there. And mm-hmm. It's such an amazing phenomenon that people won't look at it.
I suspect that some of the propaganda strategy that was conducted in the past number of years, when you begin to explain some of this material to professional left-leaning individuals, they'll dismiss it as right-wing conspiracy.
And well, that is what has made me so suspicious of KPFA, where if you ever bring it up, you know, like they were interviewing this guy who took people on nature walks and stuff, and then I said, I called in, got, you know, one of the few opportunities, and I said, you know, I go out in nature, but there's something that really is bothering me, and I said something about the sky, and then the guy just got so mad. He says, oh, come on, those are just natural contrails. Oh, why do we even have to dignify this with a response, you know? And then it's like they've turned skepticism on its head, you know? We're the skeptics, and they're acting like they're the reasonable ones. Oh, why? You know, when the sky looks like an amazing horror.
Vivian, I want to offer a response. Not that it really does any good for this, but it might do something. And this is from a response that Tom Slate out in California.
Yeah, I know him.
You do? Okay, you know what he says? He says, when somebody responds in that way, oh, come on, those are just contrails. Well, the response he gives, how do you know what those are? How do you know what those are?
Uh-huh.
Which is a great response. Please tell me how you know for sure that those are contrails.
It is, but has he ever gotten any good result? I mean, they do not want to take it in.
Well, it does sometimes cause the individual to reflect a bit on the response.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's like they can't answer that, really.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to target the climate activists. That how can they just go on and on and on about climate change and never address that? Even if it is natural contrails, it would affect the climate and so that. But they're very carefully never talk about that. I mean, that is so suspicious. I feel angry at them. You know, I talked to Bill McKibben once. He came, and I made sure to go, and I handed out a bunch of geoengineering flyers before he went on. And I went, and, you know, while he was doing his book signing, and I told him about that. I said, and it had been a very bad day, you know, for the geoengineering. And I pointed it out to him, and he just kind of shook my head. I'll think about that. You know, I'll look into that. With a limp handshake. And, you know, he is completely bought by the Rockefellers.
If listeners want to find your article, The Real Inconvenient Truth, and other articles, how do they do that?
Well, they could go to the Berkeley Daily Planet, because they archive those articles there.
Okay. The Berkeley Daily Planet. Vivian, who wrote the article titled The Real Inconvenient Truth, I want to thank you for being a guest on In Other News, and we'll have you back on again.
Thank you so much.
In her article, Vivian concludes, "Welcome to the Matrix." And it's kind of referring to living in a world where there are different levels of awareness that are deliberately shaped on the topic of climate engineering. And there are many reasons for this. Among them is the massive campaign of propaganda, normalizing the concepts of weather control, including broadcasts on community and public radio shows, that parrot geoengineering would be reluctantly deployed if needed, during an emergency event. Meanwhile, the same operations described are being conducted in real time. Our guest, physicist Dr. Richard Allen Miller, joins us right now. He studied at MIT and taught at Harvard University and Evergreen State College. He started working in the X-Files world of Navy intelligence in the late 60s as a graduate physicist. We continue the discussion on climate engineering, future weapons of war, bio-APIs, and also update on the extent of radiation poisoning from the nuclear power plant catastrophe in Fukushima, Japan. We then open the phone lines for your questions and comments with Dr. Richard Allen Miller at the bottom of this hour. Dr. Richard Miller, welcome to Another News.
Thank you. Yes, hi.
We've covered the topic of climate engineering a lot on the show. Dane Wigington has been a regular guest along with a few others. And you gave a presentation earlier this month on climate engineering, and it covered 8 types of geoengineering. Could you please tell us what those types are and how you found out this information?
Well, about a year ago, I started doing a link by date, you know, what I discover each day, you know, trying to read different articles and things like that. And because I knew about geoengineering from the original cloud seeding days, you know, originally geoengineering was for San Francisco Airport during the fog. How do they get flights in and out on time? And so they started using iodine crystals and, you know, seeding the clouds to cause rain that would dissipate the fog. Then they moved up in stature trying to control weather as a weapon. And that was basically a military project. They started using things like HAARP. HAARP didn't work as well as cloud seeding. What they're doing now is they have taken an extremophyte. This is a bacteria that is a very small one that lives in the stratosphere at -100 Fahrenheit. It's a very hardy little bacteria. They brought it down to Earth and geoengineered it into becoming a nanobot that creates a certain polymer geometry. That geometry is well suited for holding barium oxide as a desiccant to form artificial clouds. Some of the uses of that included waveguides, where they could use Star Wars weapons in directed energy beams. Some of it was to control the temperature of the Earth because of methane hydrates. We are in a disaster situation with methane hydrates. As methane increases in production and becomes warmer, it increases its effects on our atmosphere by the square. And so a very small change in the release of methane hydrates with temperature increases the problem by exponentially. And so we have a real problem here. And we're talking about ice ages and the rest of it. That said, there is no oversight or accountability for collateral damage. And if you were to take a Q-tip and put it inside your mouth, you can put it down on a slide, and there's the polymer. It's in everything. It's literally in everything. That's why snow was burning last year in the Midwest. That's why people see fuzzy things up in the sky, see fuzzy things on trees, see all kinds of problems happening everywhere because of this polymer that is being used to form artificial clouds. The clouds aren't even real. You can see the differences in them. And they're up high. They're up in the stratosphere, which just like plutonium. Now, you asked me about how the talk went. It was interesting. There were about 200 people showed up, and most all of them knew something about geoengineering. So rather than focus on a canned talk, I just opened it up for questions. And what happened next was we went to a lot of different places to include geoengineering as a minor problem of a bunch of problems going on with Earth right now. And Fukushima is, to my mind, possibly an extinction event, has nothing to do with global warming, methane hydrates, or anything like that. It has to do with particulate isotopes falling hither and yon, creating radcon-level alerts across the globe. And if you don't believe that, go take a look at Japan on the nuclearemergencytrackingcenter.com, ENTC, and it's lit up like a candle. And there is no news reporting coming out of that country because of a gag order. It's against the law. And so nobody has any clue at all unless somebody breaks the law to make disclosure on what's happening in Japan. Right now, it's about the children. Instead of 28% having thyroid problems, now it's up to 48%. That means that Japan is probably dead. And nobody's talking about that. We're focused right now on geoengineering. And it's important to realize who's running the show here. This congresswoman in Arizona that came out and said, you know, we can talk all we want to about it, but there's nothing we can do because it isn't us.
Rick, in your opinion, where do you put the priorities with Fukushima and geoengineering?
Fukushima is absolutely the top of the list. Right now, there's another radiation band of ionized particles, particulate called plutonium and cesium-137 floating up in our atmosphere, and now going into space can absolutely guarantee that the astronauts never going to have children. You know, it was bad enough trying to go through the Van Allen belt, but now there's another basic radiation cloud up there. And when weather conditions are just right, that's another geoengineering project, is to control where that falls. And imagine your little garden being radioactive. That's why now the so-called lifeboats I'm recommending deal with greenhouses where you go out and clean your roof just like you would a solar panel.
In this particular scenario, with the radioactive layer up in the atmosphere and geoengineering can now be used even more as a weapon in particular areas?
Not so much as a weapon, but to try to control where that particulate like might fall on a populated area or up in Alaska where most of it went when it first went. You know, when Fukushima first went off, there was a huge radiation cloud moving toward Hawaii, and just before it hit Hawaii, it split, and a small amount went into San Francisco, and that's why you had all that weird tuna, radioactive tuna, that kind of thing. Most of it went up to into northern part of Alaska harmlessly. Now, that's not so harmless because now we're seeing polar bear running across the tundra with big blotches of hair missing. It's a nightmare, and the news isn't actually doing the job of informing the public because there's a lot. Most people can't even do anything about it. And what I'm trying to do is not so much scare you, but alert you so that you begin to think about hygiene differently. For example, when you go outside, you leave your shoes outside, and you decontaminate before you walk into your bedroom.
Is that everywhere or mainly on the West Coast?
It's everywhere. You can do the NETC.com site and go anywhere in the world, and you'll see that there are RADCON 3, RADCON 4 level alerts. A RADCON 5 would mean that, let's say, a Russian satellite came down with its nuclear power plant, and there it is, boom. It'll last for a little bit and dissipate. There's all kinds of crap going on. Every single nuclear reactor is leaking now. They're most of the Daiichi-like General Electric plants were designed 20 years ago, and they're all old, and they're leaking. And so just in the United States along the Madrid fault line, there's 19 nuclear reactors, and they're all leaking. And imagine if we have a major earthquake, what's going to happen next? Japan had an earthquake 4 days ago over in Japan. Nobody mentioned it. There it was in the news, but nobody picked it up. And it caused further leaking of radioactive material into the groundwater.
We've had John Hutchison talking about transmutating radiation in the air. And what are your thoughts on that process?
I know John. He lives over in Gold Beach and has actually been to my home several times. His concepts are using radar, not sound, and use off of old ships and scalaring the scalar waving it into octaves that would destabilize isotope orbitals. Whether or not that works or not, none of their experiments have been validated correctly. And Corvallis and Eugene are just down the street, and that's where John Hutchison's concept should be tested, not in his home, and making claims. Now, with that said, we need some new direction, and Keshi and some of these other people, most of it is disinformation. And listen, they can't snow me. I know I am the physicist. There isn't anything I can't understand. I don't have data, so I don't know. But when they lay the math on me, I can read that. And I know what I'm reading. And I can't be snowed from that point of view. I don't know about John's claims. I have no hard data, and it's not one I've looked at. I've looked at argon. I did that when I was working with MRU, and I have some absolute concepts on what argon is, what it is not. But those are, again, me, right now, today, I don't have access to toys anymore like I used to, so I'm an armchair physicist. I can only go by what I can read on the Internet and then try to connect dots from there. And to do that with credibility is difficult. There are experiments I would like to do that would validate, but that's where it's at. Basically, there are a lot of different claims going on out there. I think the most interesting one is on the Ukraine studies with fullerene water. Fullerenes are, they will give lethal doses of radiation to rats and then feed it fullerene water, and there is a 95% recovery, reproducible. It's being done now in the Soviet Union, in Russia, I mean. They offered it to Japan. Japan turned it down. I have those letters of decline. Why? What a fullerene does is it forms what is called a super antioxidant. It will form nanotubes that will go in and isolate specific heavy metals and ionizing radiation from the body. What a fullerene is carbon is one of the few elements, the way it's structured, it will bond to itself. And you can form flat sheets of carbon atoms. They bond to each other in forming a little matrix. If you have 60 of them, that's called C60, it will form a ball, a buckyball. And the lattice structure between the two carbon atoms is just wide enough that you can put a water molecule inside the fullerene. And they call it a Buckminster fullerene ball. And there's a C70 and a C120. Those three forms will form a geometry around Buckminster Fuller structures of geodesic domes. It forms a structure that is literally 100 times stronger than diamond. And if you put, instead of water inside it, you put exclusion zone water, which is hydrogen peroxide with a third hydrogen molecule, so it's H3O2, that causes a relationship of the water inside the geometry to cause a super antioxidant nanotube to form. And that nanotube has electromagnetic properties that seek out and isolate ionizing radiation. It's a breakthrough, probably the most important one this century. That article was in the latest Nexus magazine on the fullerene molecule. There is a darker side to fullerenes, and that's instead of putting exclusion zone water inside it, you put deuterium inside it. Now what you have is a neutron fullerene fusion bomb that is 1.4 nanometers across. The precision of control of that reaction is unbelievable. And we are meeting with Dr. Judy Wood at the farm in late March in Lebanon, Missouri, to talk about that over John Hutchinson's possible thing. We now think that the fullerene bomb was used at 9/11 with Building 7. When Building 7 came down, it came down as slag, not debris. It was not because of jet fuel, doesn't get hot enough. It wasn't because of thermite, doesn't get hot enough. There's only one thing in nature that will slag concrete, and that's a plasma. And that's why Judy Wood was talking about a new plasma weapon and started to promote John Hutchinson's concept of microwaves working as a scalar for orbital destructurization. And that's a plasma which has a temperature that is 60 times hotter than the surface of the sun. So that's, plasma is a special form of ionized gas in the way it relates to itself, just like fullerenes are.
Dr. Judy Wood, author of the book Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11, has also been a regular guest on this show. Her research prompted other guests to suspect that directed energy technology is being used covertly around the world. It can be used to create massive destruction, as you know, and be hidden amid natural disaster or conventional warfare. However, it does leave a signature, as Dr. Wood has explained in her book. What are your thoughts on this directed energy weapon?
Well, the fullerene isn't a directed energy weapon. What you do is you put a carbon fiber inside the steel. All you have to do is put this carbon fiber inside an aircraft steel structure and hit it with a normal laser. And the National Ignition Facility in Livermore has a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger looking at the target inside a 35-foot macro buckyball. And there it is. And there is the patent, and here's how it works, that kind of thing. And Lockheed is the company working with Carnegie Mellon and others that builds the trigger for igniting. Houston, we have ignition. They teleport a laser beam inside the buckyball. The deuterium goes into fusion mode, and the structure of that fullerene is strong enough to contain and hold the structure, and you have a controlled explosion. And on a nanometer, that's 10 to the minus 9 zeros. Basically, what they're doing, when you put light inside a ball, it bounces off all the surfaces, goes back and forth, reflecting itself. And if you have a geometric surface, like a Buckminster fullerene ball, then everything is focused into the center, where the deuterium is. And so you ignite this thing with a million reflections of the light. You teleport the light inside the buckyball. It reflects off the walls, and it causes deuterium to fuse. Fusion. It breaks apart. And the amount of energy that you have, it's called cold fusion because it's done at, you know, room temperature. They used to do this with tokamaks. That was a Russian device. And then we had a variety of other kinds of fusion reaction experiments. And today, those experiments are all being done in Livermore with the National Ignition Facility. And it's called Ignition Facility to ignite deuterium.
When the show began, we really talked a lot about the type of technology needed to conduct climate engineering operations, and some of those discussions were speculating whether remote directed energy devices were deployed from aircraft to create conductivity amid the metallic particulates in the atmosphere. What have you found?
That may or not be true. They had one where it was creating holograms so that you would see something that wasn't there as an imaging prospect. What I do know is that bio-APIs are next, and the NASA document, the War After Next, the Future Weapons of War, that document that just came out talks about this weapon as a viable thing and mentions the bio-API. What is a bio-API? Well, what they could do, you can, like I said, you can swab your mouth, and there you can see the polymer that's from the geoengineering. It would not take many years to put a fullerene inside that polymer so that the fullerene is inside you. That is what it'd be called, a bio-API. And it's a control device so that when the good Captain Kirk is inhabiting the bad Captain Kirk's body, and the bad Captain Kirk has a weapon where he can bring up anyone he wants on his screen, push a button, and they disappear. If we don't have that weapon, we will, because NASA is even predicting it.
We don't have a choice. We're breathing this material in, and it spreads throughout our body.
Well, it's about hijacking our air, like they tried to do our water, like they've tried to do our food. You know, we're being assaulted on all fronts. And the war for Earth is not going to be so much a physical war, but more one on a multidimensional level of assault, on levels that we don't think about, but that are part of our internal landscape, emotional landscape. And so I don't have full answers. What I do is know what I'm going to do to try to arm and protect myself. And most of this is created with imagination, and that's where we now have responsibility for the thoughts we choose to entertain. They might be true. Doesn't mean I have to think about them.
Would you have any health recommendations for individuals or empowerment ideas for people to protect themselves from the radiation fallout, the climate engineering fallout?
There are foods you can eat. There's a whole list of them. One that I use is a pharmaceutical mushroom with a lot of polysaccharides in it. And so that one is a good one. There are others, algaes, different algaes, spirulina, chlorella. The one I use is called Super Blue Green Algae off of Klamath Lake. But there's a variety of other kinds of things. Cumin, oregano, there's things that you can include in your diet that will help. I am now becoming more aware of structured water and its importance as being more important, the selection of your water to the food you eat. Food's important. Food selection is important. But even more than that, it's probably the water you drink. And there's all kinds of water. And so you have choices on that kind of thing. And to be, I'm guessing that if that polymer is inside us with the barium oxide, it is probably doing to you what it's doing to the clouds. It is micro dehydrating you. That means you most likely absolutely need to be drinking more water than you think you do. That's probably one thing. Mm-hmm. Microdehydration is going to cause a breakdown in the immune system.
Dr. Richard Miller, we're coming to the bottom of the hour where we're going to open up the phone lines to take listener calls. Listeners, if you have a question or comment for our guest, Dr. Richard Miller, please call us at 212-209-2900, and we'll be right back after this break. We'll be right back. back. We are now to take your phone calls with physicist Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Please call 212-209-2900 if you have a comment or questions for our guest. We're going to go to the first call. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, hi, how are you, and to your guest?
Good.
All right, quick questions. I'll take it off the air. Does the doctor expect contaminated foods coming out of Japan and also products? That's question number one. Number two, what Geiger counter or meter can I get that's sensitive enough so that I can check my foods here? And last question or request, can you webcast this meeting in March with Judy Wood? Thank you.
Wow. yes, you're going to start to need to monitor almost everything that you do, not just what you eat, but where you walk and how you walk, how you decontaminate when you come in out of the outside into your home, where you leave your shoes outside and you have a back room where you wash and clean your body off before you walk into your home. Normal Geiger counters are available for anywhere from $150 to $700. It won't take much to... I think what's going to happen in the distant future mm-hmm. is that stores are going to have an inexpensive mass spectrometer at the back end of the receiving section of their store where they measure all the nutrient and garbage that's in each product that comes in by counting atoms. I think it's going to get down to that at some point. And then the price of the food is going to be directly related to what you're getting and what you're not wanting.
When do you foresee something like this occurring?
It's happening right now. When I say that, the Nuclear Emergency Tracking Center has RADCON level alerts going off every minute across the globe. Japan right now is lit up like a candle. We'll see RADCON 4 level alerts going on in Virginia and Florida when some particulate falls out of the stratosphere or a nuclear power plant begins leaking. They're all leaking. Every single power plant in America is over 20 years old right now. And they're all Daiichi-like General Electric plants. They were meant to be clean, but they're old. And because they're old, they don't have spent plutonium rods, which made me suspect that Japan had been fibbing about that part, and they had probably weapons-grade plutonium when the accident occurred. I don't know. I can only, you know, guess, because at that time, Japan's economy was in trouble. They could have been selling weapons-grade plutonium to Iraq or saber-rattling with China because of their purchase of a bunch of islands that were in dispute. I don't know how that all works. What I do know is that there isn't supposed to be spent plutonium rods, so where did they come from and why were they there? And the whole thing is getting so weird. I wouldn't eat anything out of the Pacific Ocean without measuring it now. I don't know whether or not the radiation came from Japan or it came from Hanford, which is leaking in the Columbia River. And, you know, the tuna that they're pulling out of San Francisco right now is, you know, high-end radioactivity. Is it dangerous? The levels are 10 times what they normally would be. What does that mean to you? Does that mean, you know, it's horrible? No, not necessarily, because let me give you a metaphor. If I'm going into a high-energy lab with a dosimetry badge, I'm looking for radiation exposures that are 1,000 times above background than radiation. 100 times above, 100 times, would be like going through 9 x-rays or flying in an aircraft for longer than 10 hours. When you're in the stratosphere, you're being exposed to ionizing radiation way, way worse than anything on you know, down here on the ground. So 10 times, I don't know that that's going to be dangerous, except probably to children. Now, that's the real problem of Japan right now, is that the children are have thyroid cancer. And it started in the first studies that they did last year. They found the radiation levels for thyroid cancer or related abnormalities was 28%. It is now up to 48%. And we're not hearing about it because of the gag order in Japan, where it's against the law to talk about it. So the whole thing's nuts. And we have no idea how bad it is because this is uncharted territory.
It certainly is. We have another call for you, Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, a fascinating show this evening, Jeff and Dr. Miller. I'd like to hear his responses over the air. The first is 2 points of plasma. I'd like to know the name of the particular polymer and also the super blue-green algae. I didn't quite get the particular lake or source of that.
Now, I can't describe the polymer because I don't know. It is made with an extremovite bacteria. That extremovite has been essentially modified to be a little nanobot, and it makes this polymer that has a specific geometry that will couch and hold water moisture trapped with barium oxide. I don't know that it has a name. If it does, I'm not privy to that. I don't know what it's called.
Okay, great. Now,
okay, the blue-green algae is called a Phanaenophison flossaqua. It is a third, the spirulina and chlorella, and the blue-greens that come off most of the lakes up here in the Pacific Northwest. They all have that algae on it. Priest Lake, Coeur d'Alene, all of them have it. The reason it's harvested off of Klamath Lake is because it's so deep, it actually is very pure. Source of this algae. It's not contaminated with other kinds of particulates. There is what makes it unique in trace minerals. It's balanced. It's basically the same as spirulina and chlorella, except it was inhabited with micro shrimp and daphnia. Now, that means it's not a true vegan food, but it has neuropeptides, and it is the neuropeptides that from these faces and grandparents that take the trace minerals across the blood-brain barrier. Now what happens is that your neural cavity, which normally has, you know, proliferated down to a point where all it can produce is glial cell, and it can produce actual true nerve tissue again because it has a complete balance of the trace minerals, which is basically what all blue-greens are. They're trace mineral supplements. And they're all about the same. Spirulina, chlorella, and the Phanaenophison flossaqua. If the flossaqua is freeze-dried, what happens is the neuropeptide is retained. Neuropeptides are broken down and are destroyed at 94 and 98, I can't remember what it is, degrees Fahrenheit. It, you know, in a drum dryer, which is what normally would be used, is around 400 degrees, which means it would kill the neuropeptide, and then it would be just trace minerals.
Okay, Dr. Miller, let me get to my two main website where we could peruse this information further. It would be helpful. But I'd like you to give some layman thumbnail sketch of what scalar technology is. I remember some years ago, right after Katrina, I think the brother's name was Skolnick, an activist who used to bring down corrupt judges in Chicago, was explaining that Katrina was caused by scalar technology. That's the first question. The second question is, heard that some chatter through some callers on a couple radio programs where Fukushima was actually an engineered event.
Yeah, I heard that. Okay, let's go to the first one. That's Bearden's work. Bearden is an engineer out of Texas. He's old now. He will be part of a psychotronic conference in July in Chicago. I'll be a keynote speaker there on free energy. Scalar waves. Basically, a scalar is a lesser form of the image. That means a scalar wave of you would be your shadow reflected on the ground. It's lesser dimensioned, like a demon, as opposed to an angel, which is more dimensioned, if you sketch the metaphor I'm using. So when they use scalar waves, what they're doing, like John Hutchinson, will use a radar gun or radar frequency band and then have harmonics in the microwave band that are related as subharmonics of that frequency in the way it works to destabilize orbits. That's how the Hutchinson concept essentially works. A scalar wave, though, is always in reference to something. So your body has to be in reference to the sun, and then it would create a shadow. And that shadow is basically related to you, but is a harmonic of you with lesser information. Now, the second question was about, was Fukushima an engineered event? No, I don't know that, but I don't think so. Basically, there was a coronal mass ejection on the 9th, which caused a 6 or 7 point, I think it was a 6.2 or 6.4 earthquake, and then on the 11th there was an aftershock because of the fault line that Japan sits on, and that one is what caused the tsunami. I don't think it was a nuclear weapon or a device of some kind that was detonated off the shelf. I will add one final point. So I don't think it was. I think it was the sun that did it. But we're going to be in for it because Japan is sitting on a cliff, essentially. If you look from space, it's just on this precipice with nothing below it except this big trench. And it's my opinion, unfortunately, that in your lifetime, Japan will no longer exist as a continent and that we will see the end of a civilization like we did Atlantis or Greece. Tremendous loss, in my opinion. The Japanese are the only race I've ever known that actually ritualized their food in the way they ate it and prepared it. You know, the Japanese tea service, some of that other stuff is shogun. The concept it's a shame because of their type of mentality and mentat, you know, way of being, way of believing, and so on, that they could allow a gag order that would put the world at risk, essentially. You realize that the only people that do our cleanup anywhere in the world right now are our mafias. In the United States, garbage collecting and all of that is basically run by, you know, the original mafias. The Yakuza is handling the cleanup, and the horror stories that I have heard in the way they treat individuals going in to do service and cleanup is just, it's a nightmare.
Dr. Richard Allen Miller, thank you for explaining that, and caller, thank you so much for those questions. We're going to go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Vince. Am I on? Hi, I just had two questions for Dr. Miller. I'll make it really quick. Before I ask him, I wanted to know if I could throw out two names for possible future guests because they tie into what you're talking about very succinctly. One was Robert Duncan. He went from MIT to the CIA, and he claims to have made a lot of this technology. And the other is Roger Tulsis, who is just a civilian, but he seems to know a lot about this kind of stuff. My questions for Dr. Miller, one is, we know that the HAARP station is up there, and we know that the express purpose by the government is having to do with the weather, but you know there's a lot of talk about, you know, that the HAARP station is used to bounce a signal off the ionosphere that when it comes down, it can actually affect the emotional state of the people that it's hitting. I wanted to know if there was any truth to that technology. Is that possible? And I also wanted to know the polymer that he said is everywhere. Would that account for the fact that the tap water I drink that I run through a purifier, a lot of times it burns, and it just it just kind of coats the inside of your mouth?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, that's it. It like the snow that burned last year when it came down in Missouri.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
And, yeah, I live in Babylon, by the way, so.
What's that?
I live in Babylon, by the way, on Long Island, so if any other listeners, and I actually do have a Soaks, another caller wanted to know a meter. I use a Soaks background radiation meter, and, yeah, I get spikes on it.
Yeah, you do, and you will continue because there is another ionized layer of ionized particles up in the stratosphere, and it is plutonium and cesium-137. It won't fall down much by certain kinds of weather, and when it does, we have these big spikes in our background radiation, sometimes as much as 10 times. They have actually found plutonium in Arizona and Florida. Now, that's official. And so it is in the atmosphere. It is falling. We will, at some point, require a whole new code of hygiene.
Is there any truth to the HARP station being able to manipulate the way people feel?
Okay, that was based on my work. And for, I know Esalen. Esalen's bandwidth frequencies were similar to the work I did with what was called synthetic telepathy. It's 0.3 to 3 gigahertz. Now, what that does, that frequency band, that very narrow band, causes the temporal lobes to heat up and ring. And when they do, you can heterodyne on the microwave band voices, sound, that you do not go through the ear. They can hear voices in your head. Son of Sam, there it is. And with that, they have cloning emotions, and then led to the first weapon that is now deployed before any ordnance. It's called Commander Solo. And basically, when you have this aircraft with a bunch of computers sending down what we call like a P300 wave, it isn't, but it's a form of brain fingerprinting where they have actually cloned, let's say, a depression, where the plane flies over and says, you know, there's no sense fighting, come on out and get a cup of coffee. And what you see in the first Iraq war is 200 Iraqi coming out of the underground, putting rifles in a big pile, and there's two GIs standing there with their rifles. How does that work? And it's because they didn't really want to fight. Why? They were convinced, like little voices in your head. And now we can do them in such a manner, you can't determine whether it's your thought or coming from somewhere else. And, you know, your internal dialogue.
There's no regulation on this by the government?
No. In fact, Target was using it to stop shoplifting at one point and then desist. And Walmart was going to put a thing in the center of their store called the Center, where you involuntarily could step inside the circle and hear inside your head all the specials that were going on in the store.
Wow. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Caller, thank you so much for those questions and comments. Voice to skull technology. We're going to, we got another call here. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead, caller.
Yes.
You're on.
Yes. Oh, thank you. I'm just wondering.
It'll be okay, promise. Just take a deep breath and go for it.
Yes, thank you. I'm wondering, is the chemtrails, are they the reason why trees are coming down in New York? A lot of the trees are coming down in the last 5, 6, 7 years.
There's a lot of dye, like we have the oak kill out here on the west. Yes, there is videos like What in the World Are They Spraying, where they actually have Forest Service going out into the forest and showing the collateral damage that's being done to our forests because of this polymer. Basically, I think what it's doing is micro dehydrating everything. I don't know. This is my physics, and the way I would connect dots, I would think that the barium oxide is still in the polymer, and if the polymer's in the air and you're breathing it in, you've got it inside you, and it's probably locking up moisture, which would otherwise be used in cell action. So I don't know. I do know that my saliva is whiter and thicker than it was 2 years ago. I noticed there is a thing called the chemtrail cough. I noticed that certain kinds of people have allergic reactions. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. the whole story, I can only guess. There are laboratories that are now validating all of this. And what you can do about it? Boy, you know, if they hijack your air, you're kind of in a world of hurt.
Yeah. The trees that are literally falling with the whole root system, and I'm talking a lot of old trees, have been falling down.
Maybe it's micro dehydration. I wished there was a way that we could actually, you know, have a positive one-on-one correlation there, and we could actually go after them that way. The problem is there's absolutely no oversight, and there's no accountability.
Mm.
It's like, if they're over a certain altitude, you'll notice that the planes you see have no markings on it. Mm-hmm. How does that work? I mean, you know, it's United Nations. It's not a U.S. thing. That's what that Arizona senator, she held open hearings last year on geoengineering and came out to the public and said, you know, we can talk about it and we can be concerned about it, but there's nothing we can do in Congress about it because it isn't us.
Caller,
I watched...
Hold on, Dr. Miller, we're running out of time. We have to wrap up, and I just want to say thank you very much, caller, for those questions. And we're going to address some of these issues in future shows. But Dr. Richard Allen Miller, I want to say thank you very much for being on In Other News. And the website is richardallenmiller.com. That's one L in Allen. A-L-A-N, Miller.com.
Thank you.
Dr. Richard Allen Miller, thank you so much for being on In Other News.
My pleasure.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again next Monday, 10 p.m.
Take me away from this lonesome town. I'm glad you don't love me no more, girl. Too bad your people been to put me down. Down in my heart.
See you, we could get together, but that light is blinding me, man. It's hard to play when you can't see nobody, you know? Now I can see it, yeah, right. I did a thing called Stone Free, we hope you remember that one.